Hello, and welcome to episode 34 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I'm recording this about 45 minutes after the Cavs' Game 4 loss to the Golden State Warriors in the 2016 NBA Finals. The Cavs now trail the series 3-1, and no team in finals history has ever come back from such a deficit. Tonight I'm coming at you guys solo, as Arnav is traveling and unable to join me. Arnav is our numbers specialist, so tonight's cast is probably going to be a bit shorter and less stats-packed than usual. Not quite sure how this is going to go, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's going to be a bit depressing, so while I'll do my best to give my thoughts and some solid analysis, if you're looking for some optimism, this probably isn't the place to find it. I am Keith Carter, a lifelong Cavs fan living in San Francisco, whose patience with the people around me has really been tested over the last week. Cavalytics is hosted on SoundCloud, and we are available on iTunes or wherever you normally find your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at CavalyticsNBA, and you can email us at CavalyticsNBA@gmail.com. We've been getting a lot of feedback during the finals, which has been great to read and comforting, and we try to respond to everything, so if you'd like some individual attention from us, that's a great way to get it. Also, if we get or see something particularly interesting, we'll normally make a point to address it on the show. Okay, let's get into it. So the Cavs got the stomach punch I think many of us feared was probably coming, and are now in a sort of unenviable position down to the Warriors. 3-1, as I mentioned at the top of the show, no team has ever come back from such a deficit. This game was a tough one. The Cavs were up 8 as late as the third quarter. According to Inpredictable.com, which does in-game win probability, the Cavs had a 77% win probability with 8 minutes 51 seconds left in the third. That was right after they went up 8. But they sort of collapsed toward the end of the third. In fact, with 1 minute left in the third, they were down 6. They did manage to get back up 2 early in the fourth, but the Warriors were just sort of too much down the stretch, and the Cavs looked exhausted. I think much will be made about LeBron and Kyrie Irving's minutes tonight, as they looked pretty tired at the end of the game. LeBron played 45 minutes, 34 seconds. Kyrie played 43 minutes, 22 seconds. J.R. Smith played 43 minutes, 24 seconds. And LeBron and Kyrie in particular looked pretty bad. I don't know about bad. They looked tired coming down the stretch. You know, it's just stepping back and taking a look at this from 10,000 feet. This series is going pretty much exactly as expected. I think there's a tendency to want to figure out whose fault it is. And, you know, look, is it Coach Lou? Is it LeBron James's fault? Is it Tristan Thompson's fault? You know, who can we blame here? But, I mean, look, the Warriors just won their 88th game between the regular season and postseason. That ties a record for most combined wins in regular season and postseason. They tie with, I think it's the 96 Bulls. The Bulls won 72 games that year. The Warriors won 73 games in the regular season, but the first round was only 5 games back then, so that's why the Warriors have tied before they've won. The Warriors are arguably the best team in the history of the league. We've spent a lot of time on this show quantifying that in the past, but, you know, by SRS, they're top 5. By 538's ELO, depending on when you look in the season, they peaked at best ever, and I think they may end up there if they win this in 5. There are a handful of teams in the history of basketball that could beat this Warriors team in 7 games. This is absolutely not on LeBron James. LeBron has played... He's been up and down in this series. His shooting has still not been great. He's been turning the ball over a ton, but you know, tonight he had 25 points, 13 rebounds, 9 assists, 7 turnovers. Again, just the one assist away from a triple double. He had 2 steals, 3 blocks. I thought he got a little bit jumper happy and a little bit ISO happy in particular at the end of the game, but He's doing his best. The Warriors are just a really tough matchup for the Cavs and for LeBron in particular, as Andre Iguodala is, over the last 4 years, the best defender of LeBron. So it's tough for James to take over games like he did when he was in his early and mid-20s. Yeah, I mean, he's 31 years old. I think that this is sort of what this is the best that LeBron can do right now, and it's pretty good, but it's not enough to beat the best team in. I hesitate to say the best team in the history of the game because we get a bunch of angry tweets and emails when I say that, but one of the best teams in the history of the game. It's tough. The Cavs are sort of a middling finals contender. They're good, but they're not great, and hoping to beat the Warriors here is sort of rapidly fading here. The Warriors did some interesting things tonight. So they played the death lineup a lot more than they have in the past. For those who don't know, the death lineup for the Warriors is they have Draymond Green at center. They have Iguodala, Harrison Barnes, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry out there. And that lineup has been sort of their best lineup over the last 2 years. The final tally tonight is they played 16 minutes, 32 seconds, and they outscored Cleveland 36-28. So pretty effective. Through the first four games, the Warriors are plus 51 in 93 minutes with no center on the floor. So their center is Andrew Bogut, who by defensive RPM was the best defensive player in the NBA this year, but without him, they're plus 51 in 93 minutes. And with him or Ezeli or Mo Spates on the floor, they are minus 19 in 84 minutes, and that excludes garbage time. So the Warriors are finding a lot of success going with the quote-unquote small lineups where they get 4 or 5 shooters out there. It was particularly tough for the Cavs tonight in the second half. They were just not doing a good job switching on defense. The Warriors were able to get some open shots. I caught the beginning of Steve Kerr's press conference before I started recording, and somebody asked him how were Steph and Klay able to find open looks tonight, and Kerr said he doesn't know if they were really more open. He thinks that it's just hard to keep those guys down for too long. I think if once they look at the tape or the quantified shot quality stuff that the proprietary information that only the NBA teams have access to, I think he'll see that they actually were more open tonight. And I think it's because the Cavs got confused a number of times on switches. The Cavs also had a number of lengthy defensive possessions where, especially in the second half, where the Warriors got a bunch of rebounds or, and then they were able to extend possessions that way, which caused it's hard to play 50 seconds of defense in a row, and the Cavs were forced to do that. And I think there were actually three possessions where that were longer than 35 seconds, and I think the Warriors ended up scoring on all three of those. And so Cavs struggled there. And when they weren't botching it on the defensive end, they were pretty woeful offensively. They scored 55 points in the first half. They scored 42 points in the second half. They looked tired. There was a lot of isolation offense by Kyrie Irving and LeBron James. Kyrie was pretty good. He was better in the first half than he was the second half, but overall, just there's really nothing to complain about here. He was 14 of 28 from the field, 2 of 6 from 3, 4 of 5 from the line. He had 34 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, against only one turnover. He had 3 steals. He had one block. I thought his defense tonight was sort of so-so, but so-so defense out of Kyrie Irving is better than normal. So, just really nothing you can say about Kyrie. Nothing bad to say about Kyrie tonight. He was really one of the big reasons why the Cavs were able to hang around in this game for as long as they could. But at the end, the LeBron and Kyrie ISO show was outplayed by the Warriors' unbelievably effective motion offense that they seem to be able to consistently do. It's hard to watch. It's painful to watch how effective they are when it comes down. When they need it, they don't do the thing that most NBA teams do, which is put it in the hands of their stars and hope and pray. They continue to run their motion offense, and they seem to find good stuff. I thought, let's see, what else here? I think there will be some talk about the Cavs not consistently playing with enough energy and effort when it mattered. They were out-rebounded overall after having a fairly dominant rebounding performance in the first half. Tristan Thompson had 5 offensive rebounds in the first quarter. He finished with 6 offensive boards and only 7 rebounds overall. After the first quarter, they treaded water in the second quarter, and the Warriors were able to totally dominate the rebounds in the second half. I'm not sure if it was effort or fatigue. Just hard to say. Kevin Love played tonight. Kevin Love played 25 minutes coming off the bench. It was the first time he had come off the bench since 2010, so it's been 6 years for him. I'm not sure about the decision to bring Kevin Love off the bench. The Cavs started Richard Jefferson. Love played 25 minutes. He was 3 of 6 from the field, 4 of 6 from the line. He had 11 points, 5 rebounds, no assists, no turnovers, and he had a block. Jefferson played 24 minutes, 53 seconds, so 7 seconds less than Love. He had 3 points, 6 rebounds, no assists, 2 turnovers. He was 1 of 2. Neither of those guys were great tonight. It would really be nice to see Love have one of those 25-point, 13-rebound games. I'm not sure we're going to get that out of him this finals, as there's probably only one game left. But also, the Warriors are a tough matchup for him. They are able to get out to him on the three-point line, and their paint defense has sort of flummoxed Love, and he's been unable to deploy his small array of post moves that was pretty effective for him throughout the season. So I think this is sort of what we're going to get from Love, which is above-average offensive performance and sort of slightly above-average defensive performance, but not the kind of eye-popping superstar play that you might hope for. As for whether starting him or Richard Jefferson matters, I saw a tweet. When you convince yourself that Richard Jefferson is the answer to beating the Warriors, you've sort of asked the wrong question. I'm not sure. Love ended up playing 25 minutes. He's been hanging around 33 minutes. I'm not really sure it matters when Love gets his first minutes in the game. Love and Jefferson, unfortunately, have sort of proven themselves to be fungible players right now. They're interchangeable, and they sort of produce slightly differently, but similarly. I would like to see the Cavs start Kevin Love in Game 5. I think they made the incorrect assumption that Richard Jefferson was the secret sauce after blowing out the Warriors in Game 3. And I think Love has a better chance of having a spectacular game, and I think the Cavs are going to need that if they're going to have any chance in Game 5. A few other bits and pieces about tonight. There was a stretch in the third quarter where, after the Cavs got up 8, and had like a 77% win probability, they brought in Anderson Varejão, and he had a couple clutch rebounds. I think he may have drawn an offensive foul. I'm just pulling up his box score here. I think it's going to be the standard Varejão box score. He played 4 minutes and 2 seconds. He had 2 points, 3 rebounds. But what he did was he got under the Cavs' skin a little bit, and the Warriors went on a run during that period. It's amazing. Varejão was very ineffective for the Cavs all year. It's really sort of a bummer that the Cavs went from a 77% win probability with 8:51 left in the third to a 42% win probability with 3:43 left in the third. So in those 5 minutes, and a lot of it was because of Varejão, the Cavs fell apart and really sort of coughed up the buffer that they had built up. There were some things going on between LeBron James and Draymond Green. I'm sure much will be made of this on Reddit and Twitter. It appeared to me that, well, so Draymond somehow ended up on the ground. LeBron sort of stepped over him. After stepping over him, there's a replay where Draymond flails his arm up and into LeBron's groin. I don't think he actually connected, but he does flail his arm up into LeBron's groin, and then LeBron and Draymond started jawing at each other. I think they actually didn't give Draymond a technical foul during that exchange. They looked at the replay and they I think they ended up doing a jump ball at center court from there. I was surprised and a little disappointed the officials didn't give double technicals there, but I think the officials know that Draymond is two technicals away from a suspension. I think a lot will be made about whether he should be suspended for that arm swing. I don't know. I'm not convinced LeBron didn't instigate that in the first place. Draymond is always sort of being an irritant, and I'm not sure he did anything more on that play. I just don't know what to say about Draymond. He's sort of he's constantly toeing that line between dirty and intense, and that's a difficult line to toe, and I think he crosses it constantly to the point of irritation. But also, you know, by RPM, he's the third best player in the NBA. He's always in people's heads, and I think the NBA does give him a lot of technicals and flagrants. I'm not sure if he should be getting significantly more than he's getting or not. I need to look at the replay some more before I have a strong opinion on this. But I want to caution Cavs fans from complaining about the officiating in this game. This was an extremely hard-fought game. Both games were really going at it. The Warriors had 22 fouls called on them. The Cavs had 24 fouls called on them. So that's a little bit unusual. Home teams typically have fewer. Also, the Cavs do a little bit more in the paint. Than the Warriors do, so you might expect more fouls because of that. But the Cavs, the officiating didn't help tonight, but the Cavs didn't lose because of the officiating, and I hope we don't have to deal with a bunch of hand-wringing about the officiating. Let's see what else. The Warriors made 17 threes. They were 17 of 36. I guess I haven't really said much about Stephen Clay. Now is probably as good a time as any. Steph Curry had 38 points. That's a little bit misrepresentative. He had probably, I think he had 32 points before he made six free throws at the end in garbage time. He was 7 of 13 from 3, 11 of 25 overall, which isn't spectacular, but the 9 of 10 from the line and 7 of 13 from 3 will make it so that he has an outstanding true shooting percentage. Six assists, still with three turnovers, two steals. Steph was much better tonight, but still we haven't seen the Nova Steph that we saw a bunch during the regular season. So the Cavs did I'm not going to say they even did an okay job on him, but they did a passable job on him. Clay had 25 points on 7 of 14 shooting, 4 of 9 from 3, 7 of 7 from the line, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, and a turnover, and a steal, and a block. Those two finally had their sort of, Splash Brothers game. They had 11 threes themselves. The Warriors had 17 threes on 36 attempts overall. 17 threes is a new NBA Finals record for threes in a game. The previous record was 16. It's no surprise that the Warriors are setting three-pointer records. That's what they do better than any team in the history of the game. Cavs have been honestly lucky so far not to have to withstand a three-point barrage like they did tonight, and I think the Warriors have even another gear still. But hopefully we don't see it in this finals. Let's see here. I saw a tweet. I'm going to give, I guess, a few reasons for optimism here before I wrap up. The Cavs have played four games in the finals now. They led in the third quarter of three of them, and they are playing the best team in the history of the league. I don't think the Cavs have enough firepower to beat them, but if there's reason for hope, it's that the Cavs have established that they are able to play with these guys. I'm not sure we have an answer for the Warriors' motion offense in the fourth quarter versus our ISO heavy offense in the fourth quarter. I think that the Cavs need to be up 10 heading into a fourth quarter to have a chance to win. I just think that through better coaching or better routine and repetition, the Warriors have a system that is more reliable in the fourth quarter than the Cavs do. But if the Cavs can figure out a way to have a lead going into the fourth quarter, they have a chance to win game five. Interestingly, teams are only 17 and 5 in game fives when up 3-1. So I think I mentioned at the beginning of the show, no team has ever come back from a 3-1 deficit. But nevertheless, teams are only up are only 17 and sorry, 17 and 15 in game fives when up 3-1. So That's not great. With home court, they're 13 and 10. You know, this isn't unprecedented. Those numbers are sort of, stats like that are sort of non-causal. So, in that sense, they're just more of a fun fact than anything, but there's a little bit of reason for hope there. And I'm also curious how much the 2-3-2 format, the NBA switched to a 2-2-1-1-1 format last season, or maybe the season before. So most of these 3-1 series happened before that. So I think that may have something to do with this. But in any case, being down 3-1 certainly hasn't been, you know, the final nail in the coffin in seasons past. So I think the Cavs have some hope there. I thought LeBron, as I mentioned, LeBron and Draymond got into it a few times. At the final one, I saw LeBron yelling at Draymond, "We'll be back here for game six." And I think LeBron, sort of toward the end of this game, got mad. And LeBron, the sort of mad LeBron is a meme that goes around on the internet, and people are like, you know, when is that mad LeBron gonna happen here? I don't think LeBron can offer much more than he has, but you know, if he does have another gear, I think he will find it in game five. I think he's a little bit upset about the way this is going, and I think that if he can, to the extent it's possible that he can step it up, I think he will, and that gives me some reason for hope. Irving has been absolutely spectacular this entire playoff run. I would never have expected it. I'm shocked at how well he's played, and I think there are great reasons. Well, 3 years from now, Kyrie Irving, I think his upside now is one of the top five players in the NBA. I think that he has a lot of learning to do about how to play defense, how to implement emotion offense, but his physical tools are, you know, maybe amongst the best ever, and the way he's played this finals gives incredible reasons for hope, not just for the future, but also for Game Five. If Irving could continue to pull off the shooting that he's been able to pull off, but with a little bit better shot taking, you can imagine him tonight. He went, I think I said 14 of 28. You can imagine him having a game where he goes, you know, 15 of 22 or something, and that would be a huge benefit for the Cavs. A strong argument could be made. We talked about this on the last podcast that Kyrie Irving has actually outplayed Steph Curry in these finals. The numbers back that up. I think Steph Curry's gravity and the way that he makes the players around of him just by the invisible gravity effect probably exceeds what Irving is doing for the Cavs. But in any case, that it's even a question is a very promising sign. So, I think all of those things can, you know, spell po you know, spell possibly good things for the Cavs in Game Five. If I were to pr make a prediction here, I think the Cavs will lose Game Five. I think they will lose it, pretty badly. I'm worried that if the Warriors go on a run as they are wont to do in their home arena, and the Cavs get down 12 at some point, I worry about their ability to withstand that. I've seen some things that sort of trouble me in that regard. The Cavs are unable to withstand these runs. I'm not sure it's because the Cavs are poorly coached or because they're mentally weak. It's because they're playing the best team of all time, and it's demoralizing when the best team of all time does things that only the best team of all time can do. When Steph and Klay make back-to-back threes right after you fought your way back into a game, it's tough to keep your chin up and go out and continue to execute a perfect motion offense and switch perfectly. It's just tough to do, and the Cavs are trying out there, but they just don't have quite enough firepower. So I think they will lose game five. I think the Cavs have maybe a 15 or 20% chance of winning game five, which is pretty low, but not non-zero, and I will of course be watching and hoping, as only a Cavs fan can do, that they can pull it out. Thanks for listening. This has been episode 34 of Cavalytics. A bit of a short episode tonight, and I'm sorry for the tone. I hope it didn't feel too much like a funeral, and maybe this offered at least something for folks to listen to that's a little bit better than the narrative put out by ESPN and NBA TV after the game. You can email us always at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. And we will be coming back at you after Game 5. Go Cavs.